Hello and welcome to the Reloading Raichu episode 18. I know it's been a couple weeks since the last episode, still getting back into the swing of things, but I think the next big episode, Christmas, is coming. I don't know if you guys have checked your calendar, but we're sitting at like 50 days or something like that away, possibly less than that. And I figure it's time for probably a Christmas presents episode. Now, this probably won't be targeted as much for the people who listen to this as the people who are married to or friends of or family of the people who listen to this. So this next one might be an episode that you want to share with your family or share some of the ideas. I'm going to try and go through and give some ideas of what to get the reloader in your life for Christmas. And while it seems like this should be an easy topic because most of us have an entire gigantic wish list of junk that we'd like to have, in the end, it's actually really hard for someone on the outside to come in and buy stuff for us. It's not really that much different than any other hobby. And what it is when you think about it, you could say, oh, so-and-so likes reloading. Reloading uses dies. Let me just get him a set of dies. Well, that doesn't really work because we probably have dies for whatever we want. If we don't, then it's probably you need to know the specific caliber, you need to know what make, all of that. So I want to avoid a lot of those pitfalls and make it a little bit easier for people. Some things that work for just about anybody, or at least some quick things to check before you just go buy something. Try and make it easier and try and make sure that holiday presents are really helpful to people. Stay tuned. I think that's going to be the next episode because I'd really like to get it done before Black Friday, because there typically is a few reloading deals that pop up on Black Friday, but that's also when people start shopping. Next quick thing, will we see a panic? I am recording this on the 4th. I hope to have it published on the 5th. On the 6th is the elections a lot of places. I know people are already turning out in record numbers for early voting. Depending on how it comes out, depends on what we might see. I don't think we're going to see a panic like we did when Obama got elected and during all of those time periods, because I think that it's whatever might happen is still going to be a little slower. But, you know, not to get into politics, there is a risk. I know things are just now getting settled back out. I saw some 22 long rifle down for 12, 13 bucks a box, which hasn't been seen in years. Reloading stuff is starting to become available. Should you stock up? I'm going to leave that up to you. I definitely don't want to be the panic setter that says, oh, everything's burning down. We very well may come out of this election better off than we have been. But just something to consider if you're already at your favorite supply dealer, and they happen to have stock of what you need, might be worth grabbing a couple extra pounds of powder or a few things of primers just to avoid that. Speaking of that, sort of related to that, because it has to do with stocking inventory, and also for me, I-Corps season is now finished. We take a break. Our last shoot is in October, and then I think we pick up in March or April, something like that. It just gets really complicated with the holidays. It's a smaller group. We're kind of lazy at times, though I don't know why we enjoy shooting through the Georgia summers, but we don't shoot through the mild Georgia winters. I don't know, but we take a break. So I was considering starting to shoot USPSA again, probably single stack or limited 10, either one with a 1911. So I kind of came down to this problem, I'll call it a problem, of what do I load for bullets? Now, for my 45 loads for revolver competition for I-Corps, they're 135 power factor, and I load a 200 grain RMR plated round nose. They slide into the chamber wonderfully in the revolver. They make power factor. Really simple load. I've had really, really good luck with those RMR bullets. They're very consistent. The price point is very good. So what do I do for my USPSA rounds. And to start, the revolver loads will not cycle the 1911, nor will they make power factor. So, and I don't really feel like upping the charge in my revolver rounds to where I'm shooting at a much higher power factor because I'd like to stay competitive. So, what do I do? Obviously, there's a large amount of logic in use the same bullets, because it means it's easier to keep stock because I pay attention to one bin. When that bin gets low, I order one thing and it restocks me for both, and I can use it for either one. For two, it's the bullets have been really good for me. They feed really well in both guns with the right load. I haven't had any of the issues of pushing the jack or pushing the plating off of them or anything that I have with a lot of the other brands. And the price point is really pretty good. And that's kind of part of the problem that I've had is, on the flip of that, I started thinking about it and was kind of mentally pondering over, wouldn't it be really great to have two different types of bullets? Maybe I do a coated bullet or a lead bullet, maybe a semi-wad cutter, something different for my 45 1911 loads. Obviously, my logic there, if you call it logic, is then at a quick glance, I can tell, okay, these are revolver loads versus these are semi-auto loads. And I don't run the risk of showing up to a USPSA match with ammo that won't even cycle the gun, or vice versa, loading a bunch of moon clips with stuff that is not my normal for revolver. The problem that I've run into is in the bulk that I buy those in, any of the other options that I've looked at Blue Bullets, I've looked at Missouri Bullet Company, I've looked at a number of other bullets, and something that's comparable to hop between. So I was looking at buying quantities of around 1,000, so we're going to say around $100 for bullets shipped. The price difference that I've got between lead cast, lubed, powder coated, high tech coated, whatever, and plated bullets is like $2 or $3 per 1,000. And to me, it's really hard to justify getting something that different when the cost savings is that minimal. So I really don't know what I'm going to do there. I think for now, I'm just going to load the two and try and keep them really well organized, really well separated. If that becomes a problem, I might change it. But I just, the bullets have treated me so well. And for the price point that they are, I think that they're really pretty good. And one thing I am doing is I'm trying to, I think I told everyone, I got a bunch of those MTM 4 ammo can carrier things. Got them all assigned except for one, and that's probably going to be for 6mm Mongoose plinking loads. And I started trying to shoot more over the past few weeks and realized that for a lot of basic stuff, so non-competition, I really just didn't have anything. As far as, like, you know, I'd have 145s that I'd thrown together out of the last of a box of bullets. I had a few 9mm here and there. So I'm kind of going through a project right now of trying to load up a full ammo can of 45 and 9. And then if I finish that up, I'll probably try and hit the 38 special after that. If I don't try and load, I was going through my bullets in storage and realized that I had 400,000 million 6mm bullets for my 6mm Mongoose. Apparently, they put them on a really good sale, and I must have gone hog wild. Or I just went hog wild and probably got ripped off. But I just kept coming across more and more boxes of 500 rounds to the point that I've started looking, and I probably need to just buy an 8-pound jug of powder to load all those, because I'm going to run out of powder well first. So it's kind of been a side project of mine and kind of some mental things that I'm going over. But talking on the 9mm, I've been working with the RMR Match Winner bullets recently. They seem to shoot really well. They load really well. They are an FMJ bullet. I have been considering for these, since they're plinking loads, going with their MPR, which is a jacketed hollow point, but it doesn't have a real big hollow point on it. It's not like a gold dot or anything like that. So they are an expanding bullet. You can use them for expanding purposes. But their advantage is that they're only like a half a cent more expensive than most of their other 9mm bullets in the same weight range. So I may switch over to those. Just, I really like running all of my 9mm with hollow points, because those seem to be really picky on not feeding hollow points. And I'd rather find that out about a gun in a lot of plinking rounds than trying to do the, oh, I'm going to buy some really expensive self-defense rounds. I'll put one magazine through it because they're too cheap and they're too expensive and I'm too cheap to buy a bunch of them. So I think I may switch over to those when these are out, but I've got probably 400 more of these to load. And then I think somewhere I've still got a whole box of 135 grain Molly coated that I need to run through. So, but that's kind of what's been going on with me. Before we get to our main feature here, I want to remind you that the Reloading Rag Chew is part of the Self Defense Radio Network, a group of podcasters with topics of all different things in the firearms community. I encourage you to visit our website at sdrn.us. Here's an intro from one of our other shows and some of the exciting content that you'll find on the rest of our network.
This is Cheryl Todd of Gun Freedom Radio.
And I'm the other guy, Dan Todd, reminding you that we and the show you are listening to are proud members of the Self-Defense Radio Network.
Find out more and check out all of the other great shows and content at selfdefenseradio.net.
I want to talk about used equipment, because I've seen this pop up a few times recently. Depending on where things go, if we do end up with a panic, this can come up. And I think it's something that a lot of us are doing this and lying to ourselves, saying that we're trying to save money. And because of that, used equipment provides a really tempting thing. And I want to go over, there's nothing wrong with it, but there can be things wrong with it. And what to look for, what to avoid, what some of the common pitfalls that I've seen are. I started out with a whole pile of used reloading equipment, and it was honestly really frustrating because I didn't pay attention to some of the warning signs. I didn't do my research beforehand. And it's part of what led me into getting rid of all of my stuff en masse and then waiting a couple years and coming back into the hobby. So what's great about it? You can save money. It's a really obvious thing. There are a lot of people out there that get into reloading and for whatever reason drop it. There's also a lot of people that get into reloading and upgrade and don't need the old equipment, so they sell that off. All legitimate reasons, things that happen. I've seen people who went out and bought a whole pile of equipment and never even took it out of the box before they realized that for whatever reason, maybe it was the time commitment, maybe it was that they didn't have space, whatever it was, they never used it and it never came out of the box. And whenever you can find something like that for a good deal, those can be some of the best. But on the flip side of it, what we can run into is, I've seen a lot of ads listing reloading stuff for what I consider to really not be a very good deal, but they present themselves as a good deal to someone who doesn't really know the market. So you've really got to do your research. The other thing is, and this is what I got, is I got a decent deal when I bought all of my stuff, but I kind of ended up with the junk pile. And I'll get into what I mean by that. It wasn't that I was intentionally deceived. It was, I bought a lot of stuff that wasn't really what I needed. But I bought it because it was a huge pile of stuff. So let's first talk about the price, because that's usually where I see problems. I see a lot of things come up frequently in this. One is reloading equipment sells for fairly predictable prices if you're watching the market. For example, Dillon equipment tends to sell for between 70 and 80% of new pricing. Lee stuff usually sells for, it can vary between 50 and 75%. Some of their stuff holds its value quite well. Some of it doesn't hold it as well. RCBS is much in the same boat. So you're going to look that most used reloading equipment from a name brand manufacturer, a manufacturer who still supports their products, you're going to be looking at about 70 to 75% for what I'm going to call the hard goods. These are the presses, the dies, those kind of items. But what I will say about those, and it's something that I see a lot, is those are for items that have been maintained in very good condition. So a set of dies may cost $35 when it's new. Used, they're going to go for $20 to $25 typically that I've seen for the same quality. We're not going to get into the super premium stuff. We're not going to talk, you know, Redding competition stuff. Let's talk a normal set of dies. But if I look at the dies and they've got a bunch of surface rust on them, it's obvious that someone's gone after them with a pair of channel lock pliers to do them. You know, the things may be missing on them, like the lock rings are gone on them. They're clearly damaged. The threads are damaged. They're really dirty. Those dies very quickly drop in price to me. For a set of dies that I'm going to have to de-rust and do all that work to, I'm not going to give someone more than 10 or 15 bucks for them. I've even seen them go as low as $5 because it's just, for most common calibers, I can go out and I can buy a set of dies on Amazon to me in 2 days for about $30 on Amazon. I think I said Amazon twice there, but it's just really hard, and I have a hard time paying $25 for something that I can get brand new for $30 or $35, and I've got to drive and meet the guy, or I got to deal with PayPal, and I don't know the condition of them, so watch out for that. Another thing to watch out for is a lot of people, especially on estate-type sales, they'll see, oh, they're 45 ACP dies. They'll go on there and they go, okay, RCBS 45 ACP dies are $40. I'm going to price these at 30. And what they don't realize is they're probably older dies and they may be non-carbide. So they're pricing off of the normal die now, which is the carbide die, not the non-carbide die. So that's another one. If you're going to be buying this stuff, you really need to be familiar. And like, if you don't know what to look for in a sizing die to see that carbide ring, either ask someone to go with you to help you out, or maybe hold off and buy new for now. The other common thing that I see is people will put up there and, hey, I've got a Lee O-frame press, and I've got dies, and I've got all this stuff, and I'm asking $600 for it. And I'm like, and I start adding it up, and I'm like, okay, that press is like $40. Dies are like $30. You've got, you know, $50 worth of other stuff there. Maybe a balance beam scale, a powder tickler, that kind of stuff. So I'm sitting there and I'm like, this is like $150 worth of hard equipment. And then I look and they're like, well, I've got 2,223 brass that I'm valuing at $150. And I've got 5 pounds of powder at $30 a pound. And I've got, you know, projectiles at this. And let me be perfectly honest here. Consumable goods do not go at retail prices on the used market. They just don't. I don't care if you went out and you bought brass from the best brass remanufacturer in the business and you paid $100 per thousand rounds. If 223 right now is going for $40 a thousand on the used market, That's what your brass is worth. And trying to sell everything like a package like that, often you need to be willing to take a good hit on everything to get rid of it all at once. Otherwise, you need to be listing the stuff all separately. And I say you, I'm talking to the person selling this. If you're buying it, keep this stuff in mind. Same with the projectiles. Look up what projectiles are going for. And one thing I will say is there is more value if you're buying from someone and they've got 500 of the same kind of projectile versus if you're buying from someone that has 20 boxes of 20 different types of projectiles. When you are starting out, changing that many variables constantly, yeah, you can think it's great and there is some value in, hey, I can experiment with all these different ones. It's not a great thing, and I'll get into the pile of junk later, and that kind of can fall into that. You know, powder, brand new, $25-$30 a pound. It does not go for that on the used market. $20 a pound if it's unopened. I pay $10 a pound if it's opened powder. Because I don't know how well it's been taken care of. I don't know. Yeah, I can get out the scale and I can measure exactly how much is in it and all that. It's easier to say I pay $10 a pound and I shake the can and see if it feels like it's half full. But, and this will get in, you know, I see it all the time. $600 for this pile of junk. I've got $1,000 invested in it. For one, I usually look at it and go, the only way you have $1,000 invested in this is if you bought it at panic prices and you paid way over retail for it, which is what a lot of these guys that are trying to dump this equipment have. They bought it when the market was just stupid. They were paying $50 a pound for powder or $40 a pound for powder, $50 a brick for the primers. You know, bullets were in sort. Stuff has got to be priced off of what it is now. Or you need to hold on to it and wait for the next panic, and then you can try and sell it for that. So I really don't like that blah, blah, blah invested. The other one is I've seen people that said that, and the only way that I can figure it out is if they're calculating whatever they put into the rounds that they made and already shot. And math just doesn't work out there. So that whole, I've got $1,200 invested and I'm asking $800, I don't care how much you spent. It's worth what it's worth today. So really watch out for that kind of stuff. If you are buying a whole kit of stuff, spend the time, go out there, go to the major, you know, you don't have to price shop every little thing down to the nickel, but go on Mid-South or go on Midway, add in all of the stuff, all of the hard goods in there, go on one of these bigger manufacturer sites for components and add in, okay, this much brass, this much, and then add in, you know, okay, the guy says he's got 4 pounds of unopened powder, $20 a pound, that's $80. Do that and make sure it lines up. You should be paying, like I said, about 70 to 80% on the hard goods. And then you should basically be paying at most used, you know, kind of common pricing. So go on MeWe, go on one of these sites that people are selling this stuff. That's what you should be paying. And if you're buying $800 or $1,000 worth of stuff, they should be cutting you a pretty good deal to get rid of all that stuff all at once. Don't be scared to walk away. It is not worth spending too much money getting into this, because I can guarantee you, no matter how good of a setup you buy from them originally, there's going to be stuff that you're going to need, and you're going to need to add some more money in. Things to look for. Look for stuff that's organized, that's clean. Obviously, new in the box is great, but when you see the die set and it looks like the stickers are falling off because they've been soaked in water, it's not a great sign. You know, if you're looking at a press and it looks like it sat in the mud under someone's house, it's probably going to be a basket case on you. Obviously, this is different if you're buying something vintage, like an old Hollywood or something like that, but that's not what this conversation's really about. Give stuff a really, really good once-over. On the dies, look at the threads on them. Make sure that there's no damage to the thread. Thread the cedar in and out. on a press, make sure that the threads in the press are very good. Make sure that there's no wobble in the main pedestal. Make sure that a shell holder goes in there real nicely. These are all places where someone kind of being ham-fisted can damage the equipment and might be trying to get rid of it, or maybe they didn't even know what they did, but they suddenly discovered that it wasn't working well for them. On a progressive press, it is even more complicated. Run it up and down several times. Make sure that the shell holder is indexing properly. Make sure that everything seems to be moving freely. If you buy a progressive press and it is in pieces, you are buying a project and you need to price it as such. So look for organized, look for clean. You know, if you're buying a bunch of powders and stuff from somebody, look for the guy where the powder containers are fairly clean. Look for the bullet boxes where they're organized, they've written on them how many's left in them, they've taped them closed or whatever. Don't buy the one where it looks like they just threw it all in a bin and bullets have fallen everywhere and it's just a mess. It's a sign that you're not going to be happy in the end. If you're looking at a collection of stuff, look for someone who is focused on one or two calibers, or maybe three calibers. It tends to be when you find that someone's getting rid of, here's 16 different calibers that I reloaded. I find that's where we'll get into one of the big what to avoid. So look for the guy that's getting out of it that's, hey, I bought all this stuff for 223 and 9mm, and everything's focused around there. If you go with the guy that's got 16 sets of dies, chances are no one of them is going to be really ready to go. What to avoid? For one, anything that's been used by a pro shop or an FFL to reload ammo, typically this comes in on the Dillon, especially like the 1050 presses. I like to avoid those. For one, a lot of the manufacturers technically don't warrant lifetime warranty equipment if it is used commercially. For two, there's usually a really good reason why these guys are getting rid of this stuff, and it's because they've rode it hard, it's been put up wet, and they've realized that whatever it is can't keep up with the commercial production, and they're moving up to like a Camdex or something like that. So unless it is an absolute screaming deal, I would avoid former pro shop stuff. And then the other one, which I've alluded to this three or four times now, is the pile of junk. This is the, hey, I got a press, I got 17 different calibers worth of dies, I've got a trimmer, I've got this, I've got this, I've got this, and it's like a never-ending pile of stuff. What I've found with these is it tends to be a never-ending pile where nothing is complete. And I'll give you the example of when I bought stuff originally. I got a deal and it was a RCBS Rock Chucker press, so it was a good press. There were seven or eight different types of dies. I could only use like two of them. So the others, I was always stuck with this, like, well, do I sell the dies or do I keep them? Or do I buy a gun now because I've got the reloading stuff? Half the dies when I got into them weren't complete sets. They were missing something. They'd be missing a seating stem. They'd be missing this, missing that. A whole pile of random powders, some of which were still in paper cartons and metal tins. I had powders that had something else like Sharpie over the outside with another kind of powder written on it. So obviously you don't trust that kind of stuff. So what you're buying there is fertilizer or maybe cannon fodder if you have a little cannon. It had an RCBS trimmer, yet none of the shell holders fit any of the calibers that were with it, and it had no pilot, so I'm not sure how the guy ever used it, but when I was buying in, I didn't know any better, and I just bought in and said, okay, sure, I'll go with this. You know, it had a digital scale with it. Well, come to find out, the scale wouldn't read in grains, it would only read in grams, so I spent my first year trying to reload of having to like look up the grains, convert that to grams, figure it out. It was just a whole pile of stuff, and while I got a decent deal on it, I ended up cleaning it all up, got rid of pieces here and there, sold the whole lot of it. I think I made some money selling it. It was still a not great way. I would have been far better to go out and buy a Lee press for $40 and two sets of dies and build my collection from there. And in the end, I might have spent the same amount of money, but it would have been a lot less frustrating along the way. And I see those kind of deals pop up all the time where it's, I got, you know, this just pile of stuff. I mean, and as an experienced reloader, I sometimes target those. A friend of my uncle's was getting out of reloading, and he had just a random collection of junk. But some of it was good, and because I was willing to take everything off of him, I got a pretty good deal on it. And those kind of things do exist, so I'm not going to say that they're bad. I'm going to say when you're starting out, it can be a really stressful way to go. And what you'll typically end up finding is that you go out and you buy all this equipment, and then you end up spending as much as you would have buying a really basic set of equipment to get that stuff fixed up and working and get everything that you need. Those are my 2 cents on used equipment. Like I said, it's a great thing. It's a great way to get started. It's a great way to upgrade. There are tons of guys out there, and what most of us recommend, start with a single stage. Start with a Lee turret. Start with this and that. When you get good with that, that's when you can upgrade to a progressive machine or upgrade to a fancier machine. So in theory, all of us out there that are starting out at some point are going to have our starter equipment for sale when we move up to bigger stuff. Those are great deals. But I've also seen a lot of people get into deals, and I've seen a lot of quote-unquote deals listed where I look at it and I'm just trying, like, I'm going through in my head, like, how do they get this price out of this? Because it's just a, honestly, some of them are just a ripoff. And a lot of what it is, oh, I invested all this money in this during the panic. I didn't know any better. I bought it all at full, you know, and it, that's not how you can price stuff, and that holds true for any market. So hopefully this has been helpful if any of you guys are looking to get into this, if you're shopping for used equipment, if you've been looking out there. The biggest thing I'll tell you is do your research, know what the stuff costs new, and make sure that you're getting something of a discount. But keep in mind, this stuff does hold its value. So, you know, you can say, oh, this press costs $400 new. You're not probably going to get it for $200. You're probably going to get it for $250, $300, $350, depending on the desirability of it. So keep that in mind. Another thing to keep in mind, and I see this a lot, an individual cannot ship powder or primers. You have to be a hazmat shipper. Most gun shops can't even ship the stuff, except for a few. So if you see a deal online where someone's, you know, it might be on Arms List, it might be on a forum, whatever, and they say, all this powder, blah, 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 blah. If you can't pick it up from them, you can't legally get that powder. So what, one of two things is going to happen. Either they're going to tell you, I can't ship you the powder, and that part of the deal is going to go away. Or they're going to illegally ship you the powder, and both of you guys are at risk. So don't do that. Watch out for those deals. So that's my last little tidbit. Like I said, pay attention. Next episode should be the Christmas episode. Well, Christmas present episode. If you guys have any ideas, if you guys have found anything that's really great, like I said, I'm not going to try and get into the really specific stuff because that's hard for someone who's not in the hobby. I'm going to go with more of the generic type things and some ideas of what any reloader could use and some of the new technologies and stuff like that that's out there. So I hope you guys had a good listen. Let me know if you got any questions. Check in on the Facebook page. The website is up and running. I need to get a couple things updated on there, but it is available now. And I hope you guys have a safe and fun time.